The Bible and Modern Science with your host, Dr. Joseph Henson of the Science Faculty of Bob Jones University. Here is Dr. Henson.
Thank you. We've been looking at the relationship between insects and man, and I think most people, if they think about this, usually look on that relationship as something bad rather than good, and we've been trying to list a number of ways in which insects are very beneficial. And as I've observed a couple of times, obviously the primary instance of this would be pollination of various fruits and vegetables. But we've talked about several things in which insects actually are acting in beneficial ways. I won't rehearse all of those with you, but after the bad rap that insects give, it probably is not an untoward thing to note things that they provide a benefit for man from. And we had wound up our discussion with the Mormon crickets that came and saved the crops of the Mormons when they had first gone into Utah. Now, I hope you don't miss in all of the things that we have talked about. We are talking about things that exhibit things, organisms for the most part, that exhibit behaviors which simply can't be explained on the basis of evolution. We have simply noted examples of these things which indicate that, to my mind, indicate simply an all-wise creator, that God has brought into existence a creation, and the objects of that creation simply have their own particular places and occupy those places well. There's an interaction between them. And the whole picture, whether we're looking at a very general picture or whether we're looking at very specific insects, constantly exhibits evidence of an all-wise creator, not simply the notion of randomness and chaos bumbling around for millions and billions of years and finally producing this very complicated, interdependent creation that we find ourselves living in presently. Now, insects also have been very useful in medicine. Again, I don't look on this program as a time to spend a great deal of time here, but for example, bee venom has been used, was, and I suspect probably still is used in many places as treatment for arthritis, the joint inflammation. There are examples of this kind that we could talk about for some period of time. One that, being a fan of historical novels, in reading about the Crimean War battles in that era, I ran across discussion in a history book that intrigued me. When men were wounded, this was back before there was all kinds of medical treatment available that we have today. They would simply be lying on the battlefield or in hospitals on occasion, and their wounds would be fed on by flies. The flies would lay eggs. Those eggs would develop into larvae, into maggots. Now, this is not something which is at all pleasant to contemplate, but there is a silver lining to the cloud. What they observed was that whenever flies had entered a wound and the larvae were there, there were no cases of gangrene. Now, back in those days, long before the development of antibiotics, the primary cause of death for battle wounds was gangrene. This is caused by a particular anaerobic bacterium that produces toxins that are very lethal. Say very lethal. They are lethal to human beings. So not only did the people who were wounded not get the gangrene, but they noted that the wounds healed well. And finally, it was discovered that these larvae would be feeding only on dead flesh. They would not attack the living flesh. So it was simply a way of removing that source of infection, and so that the people could recover well. And ultimately, it was discovered that there was a chemical, allantoin, that was the actual chemical that was responsible for the improved healing. So in ways that most folks simply would not give a great deal of thought to, insects have been of some benefit. in osteomyelitis, in deep wounds, the chemicals that were discovered to be excreted by these organisms are sometimes used even today to treat those types of wounds and prevent death and difficulty in healing of the wounds. There have been many ways in which insects have been used in scientific research. We could occupy 2 or 3 hours talking about this. If you happen to have an interest in genetics, the Drosophila, the fruit fly, probably has been the insect, the organism, the lab animal that has been most used in those studies. For decades, much of the genetic research was based on the study of what was observed in those organisms. Cockroaches, hornworms, silkworms, triatomid bugs, houseflies, all of these insects have been used. There are some rather practical reasons for this. It is much easier to keep a colony of insects alive and use them in research. The life cycle is very short. Many of the insects, it's around 3 weeks. So in 3 weeks, you can have a totally new population. They're small. They don't take a lot of food. They don't take up a lot of space. They can be rather easily taken care of. And most folks, I think, would balk at the notion of using human beings as guinea pigs. There are some who have gotten to the point they do not balk about that any longer, but they ought to. So historically, insects have been used in research study, and there have been discoveries based on insect research that have proven to be very, very helpful in a variety of ways to human beings. Aside from the genetic studies, much of the knowledge of physiology, the physiological processes that go on in our body, in many cases are virtually the same as they are in insects. So that insect nutrition, insects have been used. Studying insect nutrition has provided information about human or other animal nutrition. The neuromuscular physiology, hormones, all of these areas have had knowledge added to them by virtue of information gained from insects. And it's not something that the layman, not someone not involved particularly with biology, might be aware of. There's been a great deal of research that's been done on social insects, bees in particular, discerning how they are able to communicate with one another, discerning how they live. We'll probably talk about this a bit. The bees, of course, use beeswax as containers for the honey. And as you may or may not be aware, beeswax melts fairly easily. And what happens when you have a hive sitting out someplace in the sunlight on a warm day? If the wax gets sufficiently soft, it begins to melt, and the food is lost. The larvae that are being grown in the hive are going to die. So you'll have the bees that will come along and line up in sequence, and simply by beating their wings will circulate cooler air through the hive. Now, with all due respect, there is absolutely no way this can be an evolutionary habit. There's no bee that's going to sit down and say, boy, it's getting hot today, I'm afraid the wax is going to melt, and if we all get together and start circulating air, that won't happen. That's foolishness. This is simply part of an instinctive behavior that God created in bees when he created them. And when you look at almost any category of activity, you are looking at something that evolution simply does not have a possibility of being able to provide any sensible understanding about. There has been a great deal of ecological information that has been gained from insect studies. So in all these areas, these rather commonplace, seemingly insignificant little creatures have been of immense benefit to human beings. So when you get perturbed over your mosquito bites or your insect stings, why, remember that there has been a good deal of benefit that man has gained from the insects as well. Now, some might talk about the aesthetic value of insects. You will often see pieces of art that are made up of butterfly wings or whatever. And I will admit to some level of prejudice here, some of those in my mind very attractive. But again, whether we agree or disagree about that, it is a value that we often don't pay much attention to. Now, I think I have covered pretty well all of the beneficial areas. We've not said about all of them, all that could have been said, but it is certainly enough to indicate that insects have a very unusual place in nature. Yes, they cause problems. Yes, they transmit diseases, transmit the pathogens that cause diseases, etc. But they also are used for very beneficial things as well. So it is, as often the case, a mixed bag. There's good and there's bad. And it is entirely possible that some folks may not experience anything but the bad. But there is still all of this beneficial effect from insects. Now, having said all of that, let's look at some of the undesirable consequences of insects. Man suffers tremendous losses from feeding of insects and other activities of insects. Insects will feed on plants that man cultivates. He's not excited about that. Insects will feed on stored materials. You name a stored material, there probably is going to be some insect that is going to feed on it. Clothing, wood, other things that man finds useful, desirable, helpful, that insects also have the capability of utilizing in one way or another. And I'm not sure how to put a figure on this. I have read figures up to the level of $5 billion, billion with a B, dollars of damage that insects do in this country alone, let alone around the world. So, yes, there are injurious effects by insects. But we also enjoy a great many kinds of help from insects as well.
Thank you, Dr. Henson. You may send email to Dr. Henson at jhenson@bju.edu. That's jhenson at bju.edu. Or write to Dr. Joseph L. Henson, Box 34621, Bob Jones University, Greenville, South Carolina, zip code 29614, in the United States of America. You're invited to listen next time for The Bible and Modern Science.